Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
I feel like I'm in the lounge. The lights are soft. No, I don't mean I'm not coming on to my next guest. We go hand in hand, but not down the hall. Charles Franklin, political science professor extraordinaire at the Marquette Law School. Hello, professor.
Hey, Mitch. Good to be back.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. You've been the poster child all week with your poll. And it sounds like Trump's doing better in Wisconsin than other places.
A little bit better. Depending on which poll you look at, he's been sort of about 40-ish nationally, maybe a shade less in the last week or so. We had him at 43, so that is a little bit better. That's not too different from where we had him in June when we had him at 41. But across several things, it does look like maybe he's up 1 or 2 points from June of last summer.
Well, I mean, honestly, though, during the entire campaign, and we talked a lot during that, he was really never above 42 or so until election night, right?
No, that's right. And he did much better than our poll showed or anybody else's poll here in the state. And, of course, he won it by 0.75 points. So I think that is something to keep in mind. We also still see that on evaluations like shows good judgment, and even cares about people like you, is fairly low. Good judgment's below 40%.
You think? Well, it was a shock.
So those kinds of negative evaluations are still there. The one that he did pretty well on, or at least fairly well, was 50% saying he keeps his promises, the campaign promises.
Yeah.
And I think, that's sort of a strong point here.
Well, I think he got to 46 election night, but I don't remember him ever being above 42. So he was in the 30s, most of the primaries in the 30s, correct?
No, that's exactly right. Of course, he lost the primary here, so that wasn't too...
In fact, that was
actually fairly close to the outcome. But the performance in the fall was consistently about 6 points better than any of the polling showed.
Right, and we talked about throughout the non-voters showing up with the Ted Nugent T-shirts, and that's what happened. But I guess what I'm getting at, Professor, is that he doesn't need to be more than 40 or 42 to win the thing again, given the right opponent.
Well, I think given the right opponent, he did, benefit from the antipathy to Hillary Clinton in Wisconsin last time. At least among the voters in the areas that he particularly surged in compared to where Obama had performed. I do think that it's an open question whether Trump will always outperform the polls on election day, or whether that really did have a lot to do with the late-breaking voters who in the last week or so made up their minds to vote and made up their minds to vote against him, against a candidate that they really did not like.
True.
Because that's where the real surge comes, is among Republican voters in the suburbs who had doubts about Trump.
Right.
But voted for him in the end.
Well, what I'm getting at ultimately here is if he holds on again in Wisconsin, let's say the Democrats take on Elizabeth Warren or, mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders again, although Bernie can win Wisconsin, I think. But in other words, nationally, if the Democrat is considered too far to the left, what are we talking here? Probably have a third-party candidate or host of candidates again. I mean, there's always a chance that a John Kasich could go third-party or Mitt Romney. I don't know. Yeah. But you only need 42, 43 to win again, is my point. Is that fair to say?
Well, that's right. This is the issue is, it is very hard for a third-party candidate to actually win a state, let alone win the Electoral College. But it's fairly easy for a third-party candidate to tip the balance between two relatively evenly matched candidates. And, you know, our 22,000-vote margin was proof of that. Either of the third-party candidates that did pretty well are much more than that gap. So third parties can be influential. It's just that they tend to be there to flip which of the two major party candidates win, rather than for themselves to amass really big votes. Ross Perot's the perfect example. Got 19% nationwide, which was a very good performance, but didn't win a single state.
Won no states, Hey, I think Joe Biden, I saw him the other night talking to working class union type audience members, talking about blue collar workers, how the Democrats have lost sight of them. And I mean, Biden could be a guy that would go after Trump's base head on.
I think that's one of the reasons why so many, especially sort of old line Democrats, if they don't mind me calling them that, look at Biden and say, boy, here's some of the voices we used to have in the Democratic Party appealing to blue collar workers that we've really gotten away from in the last few elections.
Well, and go ahead. And Trump is on the steel tariffs and the aluminum tariffs. I can see him after that special election in Pennsylvania changing his tune. I don't know, but I mean, both those candidates are on board. You know, the senator, Bob Casey, likes it. So does Sherrod Brown from Ohio. Joe Manchin, West Virginia. So some of the old-line Democrats are lining up in favor of Trump's tariffs.
Right. And, you know, if you're in a steel-producing area or one that used to be and still feels the trauma of losing those steel plants, you can certainly understand that. Trump has had more problems, I think, with congressional Republicans, at least verbally pushing back on this, and a small number, but not a negligible number of Democrats who have welcomed it.
Yeah.
So it does upset the usual alignment a little bit, and it certainly is one of the areas where organized labor has been much less friendly to free trade agreements because they've been worried about their jobs.
Hey, let me ask you about the Wisconsin governor's race. Is that okay to do? First of all, the number of candidates in the Democratic field, do we have a final number yet? I mean, is that going to change dramatically or?
I don't know. We asked about 9 people, but there's actually, I think, about 15 or 16 who have registered with the Elections Commission. But those folks had not hired staff, as far as I know, or conducted major efforts in the campaign. So that's why we didn't ask about them. But even so, of the 9 we did ask about who are waging, you know, moderately expensive campaign so far, you know, the main point was that nobody knows them. Best known was unknown to 2/3 of the public. And that's not just the Democrats. We saw the same thing for the Republican Senate candidates and for the Supreme Court candidates.
I want to see Paul Zoglin smile for the first time. I'm looking for that. I know he's got to go up north, and I don't even know if he's traveling. I mean, I've been hearing he's kind of been hanging out down here. But eventually, he's got to go to Superior and Merrill and, I mean, places like that, Antigo. I don't see Paul Soglin in Antigo. I mean, there's no racetrack up there. You probably don't have, you know, big card games going on. I mean, what's he going to do, you know? I mean, blackjack, go to a casino. He could go to a tribal casino, you know.
Well, it will be interesting if, not just to pick on Paul Soglin.
No, I'm kidding. But
to see, I think, let me be more serious about this.
Yeah.
One of the things about a statewide campaign is it gets people out of their parochial homes and spreads them around. And that's true if you're a state senator or a state representative and you've always represented these few square miles of your district, or a Paul Soglin and, you know, whatever it is, 28 square miles of Madison. And so I do think that is one of the great things about having to get out and campaign. You might actually meet people that are a little different from what you're used to in your home.
Well, I know he's smiling. Hey, I've seen him smile. Maybe he's laughing. I don't know what the deal is. I mean, I worked with Jim Doyle, and he'd smile, but usually in private. But, you know, you think of the Tommy Thompson, the Joe Biden, even the Trump outgoing showbiz kind of thing. You don't see it with Paul. But, again, I hear people say Evers will win. But I've heard one former lawmaker say if the plurality to win is in the low 20s, Sondland could win. If it's the high 20s, it could be Evers. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the results of my poll just shows how flat this group is. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I just mean that they're relatively evenly matched across the board. Evers was a little bit ahead at 18 points. But 18 points was still inside the margin of error.
Yeah.
Because there are just so many people splitting the vote.
Well, 20 can win.
I think we're a long ways away from people tuning into this election. Yeah. And until they tune in, we're not really going to know which ones are going to catch fire and which won't.
If 20 wins, I'm thinking the mayor could do it. Listen, what anything else out of the poll you want to share with us here, Professor?
Well, I did think the results on opinion about the Foxconn deal were very interesting because they showed that there's some doubts about whether it's worth the money. 49% said it wasn't, 38% thought it was. But there's agreement, 57%, that this will do good things, stimulate, make a major difference in the Milwaukee area economy. But then only 25% thought it would help their local economy wherever they live. And I think that really is an important issue coming up in the election. And it's also an important issue for how we do economic development in the state, where, you know, some regions are going to benefit when we put money specifically into a project that goes into a particular place. And maybe that's a good thing and maybe it's not. I'm not talking about that. I just mean we have a conversation about how should the state be doing economic development in a way that people feel is worth doing?
I think progressives are just upset with it because the word Fox is in Foxconn. Just a theory I have. But, I mean, I told my aunt, who hates Trump, I said, look, she's from Indiana. You're watching Indiana on Fox. I don't ever watch. I said, it's Fox Sports. You know, she doesn't want to watch even Fox Sports. Anyway, Professor, we thank you very much. It's good talking to you, and keep your nose clean. I'm sure you will.
Thanks, Mitch. Enjoyed
All right,
it.
Take care. Thank you. Come back. The Academy Awards have the lowest ratings ever, 16 points below last year. I'm going to play some Jimmy Kimmel monologue action. We can talk about that. Talk about the divide in the country. University towns, coastal areas, and the middle of the country. And get back to square one on where we are. This is the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bobabella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bobabella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Okay, did you watch the Academy Awards? Now, I got caught watching The Godfather during the Academy Awards. The Godfather was on my DVR, and I was showing somebody else the movie, which I love The Godfather. It's one of my favorite all-time films. I like Godfather 1 better than Godfather 2. Godfather 2 is a great movie, but it's just so dark. I mean, Godfather 1 had a little charm, a little pizzazz. Santino, played by James Caan. Tessio, played by Abe Vigoda. I mean, the famous scene when they're going to take Abe Vigoda off to kill him because he tried to set up Michael. And he says, "You're going to ruin all my arrangements. I can't go sell." And he knows he's getting killed because all the guys close around him. And he tells Robert Duvall, who plays the consigliere, "Can you get me off the hook, Tom, for old time's sake? Can't do it, Sally." So he just gets the car and goes off to get his head blown off. It's kind of a dark scene. And the great scene in the restaurant. Is there a better scene? I ask you, fine people watching now, is there a better scene in the history of films than when Al Pacino shoots the cop and the other mobster in the Italian restaurant in the head? They plant the gun in the toilet. Have you seen that, Mike, the movie? They plant the gun in the toilet. He comes out. I mean, the train is going. You feel the nerves. You feel the tension. I mean, if you've had to do something that requires nerve, like a dance, a recital, playing sports in front of a crowd, you know what it's like to have those butterflies, that anxiety, doing a show. But having to shoot the guy in the head, well, I had to just shoot two guys in the head in the government. Now I'm going off to Sicily, where I'm going to marry my new wife, and then she's going to get blown up in the car when they're trying to blow me up.
Yeah, right.
I try to figure that out. Why? His wife got blown up in the car in Sicily because he was, like, in the house. And Fabrizio, who was his bodyguard, who turned on him, said, "Are you going in the car? Is your wife going?" "No, I want my wife to go back to see her father, to her father's house." But yet she would have gone in the car, yeah, right? Yeah. So it made it seem like Fabrizio was going to kill Michael. But Michael wasn't in the car, and then his wife was in the car, and then Apollonia, and then she blows up. I couldn't quite figure that out because I think he wasn't Fabrizio trying to kill Michael? But I don't get that. Why Michael wasn't in the car. I guess he just set it for a certain time, thinking that Michael would be in the car by then. I don't know. But, no, so I'm watching the guy. I'm recording the Academy Awards. Now, the Academy Awards are supposed to be on for like 3 hours. They never go on time. And I set my DVR for 30 minutes longer. And so I'm going back and I'm forwarding through to the big awards, you know, the big stuff, best actor, best actress, best picture. And it runs out. It runs out on me because I don't have padding on there. You know, I've got the part where, the woman from Taxi Driver, Jodie Foster, is up there with the other lady, and it just runs out of me. And then I found out that Shape of Water, is that the film that won? First of all, I don't like monster movies. And apparently it's a nice monster, but I've not seen Shape of Water. I've seen Darkest Hour twice, because I love the Darkest Hour. "We will fight on the beaches. We'll fight on the landing areas. We shall not surrender. We will defend our island." I just can't. I mean, you know, I saw it with my kids at Christmas, and I just kept crying. I was embarrassed. I couldn't stop crying. I had a stroke 5 years ago, and sometimes I lose control of my emotions when I cry or laugh. I don't tend to stop. So I embarrassed my kids at the movie. I wanted to get up and leave, but I couldn't get out of that big chair. They were just humiliated. Anyway, getting back to the Academy Awards, it was worst ratings ever, the show. 16% lower than last year. Jimmy Kimmel, again, the MC or host. Now we're going to play. He does political jokes. He took shots at Trump and Pence and the usual thing. And a thought on that, because people who are conservative out there, they don't want to watch Hollywood liberals attacking them, essentially, their conservative values. So they don't watch. They turn off. And let's play Jimmy Kimmel. A little bit of the monologue kind of react. The first one's a shot at Pence.
90 years old tonight, which means he's probably at home right now watching Fox News.
course, no, Oscar is here with us. After all the years, after all the awards given for achievements in show business, Oscar is still number one, no question about it. Oscar is the most beloved and respected man in Hollywood, and there's a very good reason why. Just look at him. Keeps his hands where you can see them. Never says a rude word. And most importantly, no penis at all. He is literally a statue of limitations. And that's the kind of men we need more of in this town.
Again, too racy for Middle America, right?
We made a movie called What Women Want, and it starred Mel Gibson.
There's a shot of Mel Gibson, another conservative.
Kind of all you need to know. The Academy, as you're no doubt aware, took action last year to expel Harvey Weinstein from their ranks. There were a lot of great nominees, but Harvey deserved it the most. And, oh, that's nice. That's very sweet. So, I'm sure he'll appreciate that applause. The Academy kicked him out, and after they did, I was curious, so I looked it up. You know, the only other person to be expelled from the Academy ever was a character actor named Carmine Caridi. In 2004, he was kicked out for sharing screeners. Carmine Caridi got the same punishment as Harvey Weinstein for giving his neighbor a copy of Seabiscuit on VHS.
Yeah, and that's okay. But again, I think what happens is the Academy Awards, you know, it become kind of seen as this elitist, bi-coastal little club, and the people living in Nebraska, people living a few miles outside of Topeka in Kansas or outside of Wheeling, West Virginia, can't relate. They just can't. And I was watching some old Academy Award shows. Do you know Bob Hope did the show for like 25 years? I mean, he did it for, the last year he did it was like 75. He did it from like 39 to 75. Bob Hope did it for like 40 years. He had a tux on. And he did his usual jokes. And, you know, now it's just, you know, it's more, I guess it's more elitist, hip kind of stuff. And, you know, half the country can't relate, you know, and they just don't want to see it. But I'm trying to think back. I mean, 40 years ago, movies that won the award. Now what do we have? It's 2018. 78, what won? Kramer versus Kramer, maybe? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking Kramer, maybe Kramer versus Kramer. Yet movies like The Deer Hunter, which was, you know, certainly a controversial film. We had Jane Fonda picketing that, if I recall at the time, because she didn't like the way it depicted the Vietnamese. But it's always been sort of off on the side in terms of culture. And, you know, the days of John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart and all those movies from the back in the day, the 50s, even Humphrey Bogart, long gone. Long gone. I mean, 67, that's when The Graduate was up and Goodbye, Mr. Tibbs or whatever. And it's always been edgy, which is good. I want Hollywood to be edgy. I want movies to be edgy. But, you know, it's kind of like the country, half the country just can't handle that stuff. His reference to the male sex organ was just too much for probably half the country. Just the mention of it. I do a comedy show, and I would do things that people would say were too edgy, and I thought they were fine, but it just depends on where you grew up, you know? You have sexual references and kind of adult references. Some people just can't handle that. You know, you got to do kind of the Red Skelton thing, or it doesn't work. I've done shows for older groups and private, and I've learned you got to be really, really wholesome. But no, he's trashing Pence and Trump, and the Harvey Weinstein stuff, I guess, was playful, but it seems kind of harmless, and that's what it is. People don't want to hear about politics. They just don't. I mean, was Lindsey Vonn a skier? She made some comment about Trump or didn't go to the White House. She got buried on social media. People were savage. Oh, and by the way, here's a complaint. Remember Gomer Pyle? Citizens arrest. I posted some innocent story I saw somewhere. It was repeated over various outlets that Richard Pryor had slept with Marlon Brando at one point. Confirmed by, I think, one of Richard Pryor's ex-wives. I found it humorous. Okay, I thought it was innocent and humorous. So I posted the link of the fact that Marlon Brando had slept with Richard Pryor, and I said, I always suspected it. I thought it was funny, harmless bit. Facebook
trolls from hell. I get lefties going, what's wrong with that? Is that some sort of, is that important? Is that, should we care about that? You know, just making some serious comment about it. And then on the right, they would say, I'm never going to watch Richard Pryor or Marlon Brando again. I'm never going to, what? I said, I'm taking it down. I took it down. Can't anybody just laugh? What has happened to the country's inability to simply laugh? Now, in my book, if I see a story that says Marlon Brando slept with Richard Pryor, I'm going to laugh. It just sort of, it was a funny image. I wouldn't have expected that. You know, it'd be like if, I don't know, you said that Donald Trump slept with Chris Christie. I just wouldn't believe it. I mean, just the mental image of it would, I find funny. I mean, you know, not that it ever happened. By the way, Stormy Daniels, have you seen her? The porn star that had the, allegedly the affair with Trump. I don't think she's naturally, I mean, I saw her on Jimmy Kimmel, and she looked to be like 75. You know, the old saying of her proportions, 36, 24, 36. She was like 74, 26, 36 or whatever. And I mean, it was just, she couldn't have been a women's liber in the 60s if she burned her bra there and put the fire out. You know, I mean, Stormy Daniels. We've got Marilyn McIntyre coming up. She wrote Make a List. She wrote a book called Make a List and says you can change your life if you write things down. And Mark McCormick, the late Mark McCormick, was Arnold Palmer's business agent and then became an agent for all these international sports stars. He once wrote that a man who doesn't write down what he has to do is a fool. Are you somebody that writes things down? Keeps records of your day? I mean, I do it when I really get serious and have to do a column. I make notes. I work hard then. But as a day-to-day matter, I'm not a guy who likes to write things down, which is why I'm on Facebook at 6:30 on a Wednesday night talking to 10 people. So there's got to be a correlation there with organization. Come back with Maryland. Fantastic. The best sporting event of the year is coming up, and I'll explain why, in the NCAA tournament or the high school tournament. It's just the greatest stuff in the world. This is The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hanks Show.
All right, welcome back to The Mitch Hanks Show. Marilyn McIntyre, the author of Make a List, and how making a list and writing things down can change your life in so many ways. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. And I was just quoting the late Mark McCormick, the famous business agent for Arnold Palmer and other sports heroes, who said, the man who doesn't write down what he has to do, and I guess he would mean man or woman, is a fool. And so, you know, you're not alone in this.
Apparently not.
So what drove the book?
Well, I've always enjoyed making lists just to see what happens, you know, and of course, I make to-do lists, but lists really open up possibilities. As soon as you start making a list, for instance, of things I want this year, then it just keeps going because the list doesn't have an end point.
That's
and
right, yeah.
As it gets longer, you begin to surprise yourself.
Well, that's true. You know, in comedy and having done stand-up, you would write. I would do virtually my whole act. I would just write one word, which would signify a bit or a joke. But, yeah, I couldn't go on unless I had that list. I mean, you couldn't just go out there without that list, right?
Right.
Now, groceries. I mean, you have the grocery list. Now, you've heard this, Marilyn, which is kind of a sexist, maybe misogynist phrase, but I hear men say the honey-do list.
Yes.
You're familiar with that term?
Yeah.
Are you offended by that term? Because I think it's men sort of adhering to their wives' request on a Saturday. And it's almost like, well, if I don't do that, she'll divorce me, so I have to do it, you know?
Yeah, I just, there's a lot to say about that particular distribution of labor. I think women do a long list of things.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Well, there's no question about it. But go ahead, though. But you know, tell me the lists that we should all write or do more of.
The first part of the book, Make a List, just list some of the purposes of list making and reflect on. And for instance, you can write a list to clarify your concerns. What am I really concerned about yet? And you might make a list of complicating factors in a situation that's bothering you. What are some of the things that make it complicated? Or you could write a list to decide what to let go of. If you're really trying to get rid of clutter in your life, both literal and metaphorical, just what are the things I'm really going to let go of? Like I've done them enough, I've had enough of them, I've used them enough. And as you make those lists, you begin to see some of your values emerging. Or a list of what I want. What do I want now in my life? As opposed to, say, 5 years ago. That would be a wonderful list to just see what's emerging and what's unfolding.
Yeah.
Or you can make a list of things I still have to learn about my family, things I still have to learn about my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lovely birthday list, just things I've noticed about you this year. But all these things are ways of getting more specific, where we tend, just in the rush of ordinary life, to retreat into sort of general feelings and observations. But I think a list is the discipline of specificity, makes you attentive.
I think it's great to be focused, have a list. Now, I have this new theory that you can't do anything unless you turn the TV off. I mean, if the TV is on, nothing can be accomplished. It's just sort of a new theory. Any thoughts on that? You can't do the list. You can't implement the list. You're distracted.
No, you really can't. You can do mindless or repetitive work, but that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's always somebody stimulating your brain or, you know, somebody's saying something or you're seeing something. I mean, it's very simple to be distracted by that video candy of the TV.
It sure is. And I really think that list making is lovely because it's so simple, but it really is a discipline which can become a kind of spiritual discipline where you do slow yourself down and think, wait, what more is there? What more is there? And you begin to peel back the layers of something that you thought you understood, but there's more to see.
Well, it could be something as simple if you're overweight and I want to lose some weight, is making a list of the meals for the week. Because people tell me that. You gotta plan your meal. Well, you know, you're running around, you're kind of, you know, busy. I mean, you don't often have that list with you.
Well, for instance, a lot of food programs suggest that you write down what you eat, and that's good. And some people make a list of things they're not going to eat. But perhaps a list of really healthy, fresh foods that I like, just to put up in front of me, like
a positive list.
And it's so that you don't have a list of things I can't have. You do have a list of things
I can have. I've heard that if you write down, I've never done this, but I'm sure you could save thousands or more dollars. But I've heard that if you write down what you spend in a day, and you do that every day for like a month, it'll be like $5,000 or some incredible amount.
Oh, no. Well, imagine if you bought a latte every day.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of money.
Oh, sure, yeah.
By my standards.
Well, that's, what?
So that's
$4, you think, or in that range?
I think a latte, yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking, you know, $28 a week just for that, if you have one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much more than that. I mean, there's just, you know, snacks and lunches out and tips and drinks. I mean, it could be literally multiple hundreds or thousands a month if you really did that. And how many people do that? Nobody wants to do that, right? I mean,
that's part of list making, is that it makes you conscious of things you tend to do sort of semi-consciously or unconsciously. You just get into a habit and you stop thinking about it, but a list will make you look at it.
Yes, you're right. Now, Marilyn, are you with husband?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to ever write down what you can't stand about him, or, you know?
No. Okay. He's wonderful. But I can write down the things I appreciate about him.
Oh.
It's helpful. And actually, I write him a poem every anniversary, and a lot of those poems just start as lists of things I notice now. For instance, he is a recently retired pastor, and so in his retirement, in the early months of his retirement, he started to paint, which is something he's loved but hasn't done much of. So I wrote him, I just wrote down all the colors that I notice when I walk into his studio. And so that's where a poem began. But what are the colors that emerge when I look at your wall? It's a really simple list, but then each of those evoked something I wanted to say about where the blue leads me or where the red leads me.
Oh, how nice, how romantic.
So it can be a kind of skeleton of what can surprise you by just happening as you write it down.
Yes, and if you're writing a list like, please don't drink so much vodka, it's not going to go over probably well with your spouse, I wouldn't think.
No, not too much.
The blues and the reds, that sounded very romantic. But
it is.
Does he do lists too?
Also,
yeah, go ahead.
Does he do lists?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he and I play around with lists sometimes, but he likes watching me do them. When one of our grandchildren started high school, I just made a list of ways to be happy in high school. You know,
yeah.
Sit where the listening is good, and sit near a window, and
be nice to the sub.
Notice whose locker is next to yours. Yeah.
Having subbed, I'll ask one of the good kids, why are they so bad? Because you're a sub. You know, so I can't do it. I don't have the patience for it.
Thankless.
Now, in terms of productivity, Marilyn, and getting things done for work or career, or making that phone call, doing that email, or following up, I would think it would be critical to make a list.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of us, increasingly, because we so overcommit, need lists just to sort things out. There are plenty of practical uses for lists.
Yeah.
But I also think lists are a fun place to just do some self-reflection. And I did one recently that's on my wall that's just called Where the Spirit Moves, you know? And I just think about moments of grace in my life. When has something happened that's really just fallen into my life as a gift?
Appreciate
it. So that I begin to notice.
Uh-huh. So gifts, it could be friends or, you know, teachers that made a difference, that kind of thing, huh?
Right. Or somebody who just showed up at the right time.
You sound like a pretty happy person, by the way, Marilyn. I don't see you cranky. It's hard to tell by an interview, but I see you as a very positive, spiritually healthy person.
Well, thank you. I think mostly that's the case. But, of course, there's been grief in my life and loss. And I do a lot of hospice work. And so I have had the opportunity to see people through that last stretch of life a number of times. And it's really a privilege. But I think lists really can help people with losses, too. You know, things I have loved and I'm letting go of now. And just to put that down, to make a little path through your grief.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you do
hospice.
Happy. Hospice is a wonderful, wonderful thing, and I think it's great that you do that. I wonder what people do in the end. Let's say you take a man who's very work-sensitive and career-driven and so forth, and it's toward the end where they really can't do any more appointments or make more phone calls or emails or whatever. I mean, what do they do? I mean, what do you find them doing at the end?
Oh, people toward the end of their lives?
Well, because a lot of us are human doings, men especially, human doings. And they're always, they got the garage, they want to do the cabinet, they want to do the basement, they want to work on the barn. And if they're not doing something, they don't have anything at all. They're not comfortable just being, hanging out.
Right. Well, there are two things about that. My mother was a real doer, and she died at 94, and she couldn't do a whole lot toward the end, and she felt really useless. So I just reminded her that this is a season of life where the hard challenge is to learn to be and remember that you are a gifted people and you don't have to know why. But the other thing is that I used to take things over that were simple. She couldn't see too well, but she could shell peas. You know, I think things that you can do with your hands that have a simple usefulness are very helpful.
No, I understand the need to be useful and productive, but I mean, otherwise, I mean, aren't we just sort of a field hand or a housemaid? I mean, what about reading a book, writing a poem, watching a great video, a great concert? I mean,
writing letters.
Or writing a letter. Yeah. I mean, we're taught almost that we have to do something tangibly productive or we're wasting our existence on the planet. Yeah. In watching. Go ahead.
I think what we all have for each other is stories. And to remind older people or people who are nearing their death that even a simple story about something you remember earlier in your life is a real gift to younger people.
Yeah, it is.
We all have to learn from each other how do you do this? And what we're doing is modeling aging for younger people.
Well, stories are wonderful, and I like hearing stories. I like telling stories. I think we all do, don't we, Marilyn? I mean...
Mm-hmm.
And that's a gift.
And we all
That's time well spent, you know. I tell you, I look forward to reading the book and getting everybody else to do it as well. Make a list. Available everywhere, Marilyn? Or
yes, you can get it from the publisher at erdmans.com, or you can get it from Amazon or A Libris or any of the Barnes & Noble, any of the online bookstores.
Okay, very good. Well, erdmans.com, Amazon. And the rest. And we appreciate it very much. And it was great to have you on the show. And I'm working on a list right now on how to be more productive and spiritually healthy thanks to you.
Great. Oh, and if people want to see anything else I've written, then have the website at MarilynMcIntyre.com.
MarilynMcIntyre.com. MarilynMcIntyre.com.
McEntyre.
Yes, McEntyre. Y-R-E. McIntyre, T-Y-R-E. Very good. Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Good luck. We'll come back. We are on the brink of, well, we're in March Madness now. The Badgers aren't playing, I know that. But you had high school teams playing, girls, boys. And why this is the most magical time of the year, why this month of March is my favorite month, why I always... and try to spend the first weekend of the NCAA tournament with my kids. And why those of you, I see Lanny Seago on my Facebook page, an old friend from my hometown, why this is so magical a month. And it's more magical in my mind than any other month. In a moment, the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com at Facebook Live.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
We are in the best month of the year in my mind, March Madness. We have favorite months. I did that in a show once years ago. I said, what's your favorite month of the year and why? And people would have various reasons. Some people say December, Christmas, and whatever. But other people say July, they go on vacation. You know, May and June, it's green, it's nice. March is the time of March Madness. I'm from Indiana, where basketball was very big. We didn't have the multiple class system like class 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A, based on enrollment of a school. The high school tournament was one tournament, one class for so many years, from 1911 until 1997 in my home state. So if you had 200 students or 150 students, you played in the same tournament as the schools that have 2,000, 3,000 students. So in 1954, Milan, tiny Milan, had an enrollment of like 130, beat mighty Muncie Central, which had like 2,700 students, in the final game. And it was the folk legend. I mean, Bobby Plump hit the shot. He now has a restaurant bar in Indianapolis. Still, that's what he has. It's like The Last Shot is the name of the bar. He's like 78, and he goes around in his high school letter jacket and shakes people's hands. He's lived off that shot for like 64 years, Bobby Plump. Ironically, he went to Butler University and graduated the same class as Mike LaCrone, our band director from Butler. And but, I mean, it was a legendary thing, and my mother dated Roger Schroeder, who was on that team, and I stayed in the home of Mark Kraft's dad, Ray Kraft, who was on that team. I just... You know, it brings everybody together, all that legend. And the coach, Marv Wood, years later, was coaching the women in Mishawaka. Interviewed him when I was in South Bend. So, we, you know, you're just like a step away, you know. And so he grew up with that. But I'm trying to explain this. Growing up in that kind of an atmosphere, there's one tournament. When the little schools, when the small schools would be leading or competing in close to the big school in the tournament, you know, you lose, you're out, right? You keep winning. And when the small schools, the whole town would be at the game. The entire town would be at the gym. And I'd get goosebumps thinking about it. I could still smell the popcorn. And the small towns would follow the team bus on the highway. There'd be a big line of cars going to the game. And when I was a kid, when I was 10 years old, my high school... 500 girls in the block section, 500, wearing red sweaters and white sweaters, and the ones in white sweaters would spell the letter J for Jefferson. And they'd walk in for like half an hour, white gloves and sweaters. We had a pep band. They had gold blazers, red and black, the colors. And the gym, we had 6,800 seats, that 6,800 seats. And we were like halfway down in the conference. There were other schools that had bigger gyms. I mean, it was incredible. There'd be a Friday night, the third-ranked team would come in, and you'd have 7,000 people in the high school gym, standing room only. 7,000, the block section, the band. It was incredibly electrifying and magical. And then as I got older, the county schools would pop in. So the city schools were watered down. They had more county schools. And then in the late 70s, kids would work more, and the block got smaller, and it just kind of changed. But that magical time. But even now in the class system, you have still the game, still the excitement, still a sectional or regional. Well, in my day, a sectional, regional, semi-state, and state. Here they have regional first, sectional second. But there's nothing more exciting than that tournament. And as long as I live, nothing will. Older people had bad hearts would be told by their doctors not to go to the games because, honest to God, they'd have heart attacks. People would die of heart attacks. My mother would walk into the hallway and smoke. She couldn't watch the game. That's how exciting it was. And then when it comes to the college tournament, it's the only sport where they call it the big dance, because if you're in the big dance, you are on the stage. You are on the same stage as Kentucky and North Carolina and UCLA and all these big blue-blooded heavyweight schools. If you're Well, I went to Butler, a small school. But if you are from, you know, let's say a few years ago, Northern Iowa, Northern Iowa, 2010, I think, they beat the number one seeded Kansas Jayhawks, the mighty Kansas Jayhawks. And Northern Iowa had some guy with a beard, and he kept making these three-pointers. You don't see that in other sports. You can't see that. Even the Milwaukee Brewers, a smaller market team, it's still a major league team, major league city, top 25 media market. They got a rich owner. They're spending millions of dollars. The players are making millions of dollars. If they beat the Yankees, which they did in the World Series in 1957, Milwaukee Braves, sure, it's a big deal, but it's not quite like the little school beating the big, big school on the national stage. That doesn't happen in football. The closest we ever had was when Boise State beat Oklahoma a few years ago. It's the only place with a small school, the little Cinderella, whether it's Northern Iowa or Butler or Southern Illinois or even Gonzaga, which, you know, is more of a school now of fame and fortune, but can beat the big boys, the big schools. You don't have that in pro football. You're not going to have a case where Madison, Oshkosh beats the Steelers. It's not going to happen, right? It's the greatest thing. And I have memories, and I'm sure you do too, of tournament basketball. And hockey's great too. I don't want to put down hockey. I happen to be a basketball guy. But there's nothing. And the girls, when I was at Butler, I did the play-by-play, and the women got in the tournament 1 year. And we followed them on the road in the tournament. And it was just great stuff. Electrifying stuff. And I just love this time of year. And when the tournament starts, the NCAA tournament, you have those first two games days, Thursday and Friday, right? And I used to take those days off. So I would go to the bar and watch three or four games at once. And people would come from work to watch during lunch. And there would be three or four games coming down to overtime. And they had to go back to work, and I could stay. And I'd go, bye. I've often said that March is the only month where divorce does pay. I don't have to go get milk. I don't have to go get bread. I've got another game I can watch. Now, I'm sorry that offends people. I'm sorry. But during the month of March, it's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, I think I'll watch a third game. And I hear people say, I did my taxes. I worked on my taxes last night. Yeah? I don't understand the thinking of that. I was at some kind of a radio open house in a bar in Middleton once, and these guys were going around saying, are you going to go watch Sheriff Clark? No longer is he the sheriff, but the old Sheriff Clark from Milwaukee. We're going to watch Sheriff Clark speak tomorrow night at Wanakee. And I said, what, are you crazy? Are you nuts? It's Friday night. It's the second night of the tournament. Oh, well, we could. Yeah. And then I got asked to speak once at a senior gathering in Monona. So when's that? Thursday at 12:20. And I said, do these people not like basketball? Or? And he went, what? So some people don't even think about it. I don't know what's. And then it turned out my alma mater, Butler, was playing that day at like 12:15. So I said, let me speak to them in May. Can I speak to the group in May? And another thought about this. The Wisconsin Badgers, to me, had a great finish to the year. They had problems with injuries. Kobe King, Demetric Trice, Brad Davidson had a shoulder injury, and that hurt them severely. The upperclassmen, Charlie Thomas, Ilikainen, and Van Vliet were busts. They weren't very good. They had all kinds of problems, but they kept together, and they played Michigan State the final home regular season game to 5 points. I was there. It was a great game. Badgers were in the game late. Then in the tournament in New York, they lose by 3 points. They were down three with the last possession, had a final shot to tie it and make it. They missed two front ends of free throws of one-on-ones with like 2 minutes to go, Iverson and Happ, and that cost them 4 points. But it was a heroic effort. They're going to be very good next year. King is back. Trice is back. Davison had surgery. He'll be healthy. You've got a transfer coming to Green Bay, a point guard. You've got Reavers, who will lift weights. Aleem Ford will lift weights. They'll be much better. Greg Gard's a great coach, and I wish him the very best. I just wish all of your teams, if your daughters or sons are playing in the high school tournament, I hope you enjoy it. They won't forget this time. They won't. They'll remember the rest of their lives. 50 years from now, they'll remember who they played, what the score was, what they did in the game. I swear to God they will. I went to a big high school reunion of multiple years in Montello, and there were graduates 1938 and graduates 1971 and 2008 at this event. And the guy from 1938 remembered exactly what the score was and who they played when he was in high school. It's great stuff. I wish you the best if you've got a school in there. By the way, the brackets, when you fill up the brackets, do me a favor. Watch the game itself. The game is epic. And sometimes there are great upsets, epic upsets, and they're wonderful games and heroic efforts. And all you care about is who you had in the pool. And I think that's fine to be, have excitement, but it's also going to be jading. It's a jaded deal. 1 year, my Butler was playing Maryland. 2007, Maryland's a heavy favorite. And we're winning the game. We're staving them off possession by possession. We're tracking down loose balls. And I'm running through babes by myself, running. And nobody else watched the game. And it finally ended, and I was like in a cold sweat. I said, oh, my God. And some, there was a woman at the bar. Who won that? I said, Butler. Oh, no. I had Maryland in my bracket. I remember I was sitting at the table in 2010. Somebody had Kansas State in their bracket against Butler, and they're cheering for Kansas State against my high, my team, my alma mater college. And I said, did you go to Kansas State? Did you go to Kansas State? How's that campus? How's that? I mean, I'm like a serial killer. It's the best sporting event of the year. It's a magical time. And I hope you enjoy it. By the way, I'm picking Villanova or Virginia to win the tournament. When there's parity, you pick the smart teams. Michigan has great momentum. Remember 2013, Michigan was fifth in the Big Ten. They got to the final game with Trey Burke. Could happen again. Anyway, thank you, folks. Thank you for the Kellers. Bob Keller, bless his heart. The Keller Real Estate Group for the space here on West Washington Avenue. Check out Washington Court. Check out Tuscan Place. All these wonderful spots downtown. Go to kellerapartments.com. That's kellerapartments.com. Even, well, space all over the city and all over the area. Mike Brockerveld, our engineer, did a great job again tonight. And Bob Abella, the wide world of radio, the great radio shows of the yesteryear, 30s and 40s. Burns and Allen, Fred Martin, you know, Al Jolson, all coming up on Wide World Radio. We'll see you next week, folks. And remember, if you play a sport, go ahead.